welcome to episode 18 of Film Yarns. This week we saw The Fly. The Fly is a 1986 American science fiction psychological body horror film directed and co-written by David Cronenberg. The film stars Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis, and John Goetz, loosely based on George Langerland's 1957 short story of the same name and the 1958 film of the same name. I haven't seen that, have you? I have been meaning to see it because I've seen like posters of it for ages, but I think it could be cool to check out. But
did
maybe
you say 1958?
Yeah.
Wow, okay, yeah, that sounds cool. We got to look to the future as well. What about the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode of this?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a pretty good take. Anyway, The Fly tells of an eccentric scientist who, after one of his experiments goes wrong, slowly turns into a fly hybrid creature. Fly was released on August 15, 1986 to massive acclaim by critics and audiences. So that's a pretty good point to start, is like, what do you think makes this so much more popular than Videodrome?
This one has like a narrative where, like, you know, Videodrome
too complex.
Has a narrative, but it's a little bit more obtuse. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff going on, whereas this one is like, you can plot the narrative through the changes in, is it Seth Brundle?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty solid character. Point. I mean, that's a, like, a pretty explanatory reason, I guess.
It's also kind of, it has the sort of triangle as well, right? It's like a love triangle. And
yeah, they set that up.
A couple of like a
right
bit more genre-based things, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of tell that this was adapted rather than Videodrome, which is kind of like spun from the mind of Cronenberg. You know
it's
what I
like,
mean?
Like, yeah, this one is distinctly Cronenbergian in the same way, but maybe maybe he dialed it back a bit. How was Videodrome 83?
I think so.
So this is 3 years later. I think this was the next one.
Pretty crazy to think that he's just churning out these films. So it's quite impressive.
Yeah, he also, I don't know if you noticed, but he played the gynecologist in The Dream, the first, like, the abortion
right.
dream.
Was that him?
Yeah.
I found that quite a terrifying scene. Like, that is, like, a serious nightmare.
Because I didn't think of it being a larvae, and then, like, I was expecting some sort of fly creature, and then it's just, like, this giant fucking larvae.
I think the larvae would be worse. Than a fly hybrid creature.
Just
seeing that, it looked like a tumor kind of as well. Like, it just looked wrong. And it was massive. Oh, it was horrible, yeah.
So he did release another film in 1983 at the same time as Videodrome called The Dead Zone.
Ooh.
I might check that out some point. It sounds really interesting. It was commercial success. So, I need to look at that. A Cronenbergian tangent.
Just turn this into a Cronenberg.
Cronenfest. Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize until I saw the opening credits that I didn't realize The Fly was also by him. I guess that might have flavored your decision a little bit to go with this one.
Yeah, I saw some thematic links, you know. I knew the same director, and I knew that we were kind of getting into the same thing. I've seen both of these films before as well, so I thought that'd be nice to see together.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as soon as it's like the inside out baboon, that's when it's like, oh, I know who's directing this. If you haven't watched it. That was the only thing I wanted to make a note of. Is like, why, other than just for him to show something grotesque, why would you test a baboon first in the fucking teleporter? Why wouldn't you do an insect or something sort of less, you know, animated and conscious?
Yeah.
It was just him being like, let's fucking chuck a baboon in there.
It could, yeah, the baboon was a weird choice. I wonder if it was just purely like, look at the sort of like derangement of the scientist as well.
I guess
he could have used a smaller thing.
But he wasn't that confident himself. I just mean, it's like, you know, obviously in all films there's a line where we accept certain things, like, oh, it's a movie, you know, that's, you know, like there's a certain, not everything has to be perfectly realistic, but at the same time they have to maintain a level of realism for like the story to be relatable. And it just seemed out of character. I mean, I get why he chose that for the effect of showing an inside out creature, but it seemed out of character, like sort of stupid. For it just kind of
Yeah,
jumped out to me as like, oh, he's chosen a baboon. That's a bit dumb, like not a lab rat or something like that. But it
that's
is what
true.
it
I
is.
mean,
Maybe it's close to the human body.
it's
That's why I had to choose a baboon.
yeah, also it's art. So, you know, sometimes you just let the art do its thing.
Yeah.
Maybe if you were looking for a reason, a feasible reason, perhaps baboons were the cheapest experiment, like lab animal at the time. I don't know. Like
Yeah, that's basically my one and only gripe, though, really.
Yeah, I think my major gripe would just be like, why did they decide to? They just let Jeff Goldblum go crazy on this, right? Jeff
With
Goldblum
the
wasn't playing a character; he was just playing himself, right? Like, because he plays himself in Jurassic Park as well, and he's a scientist there as well. Like in this one,
True.
he's sort of like, what is he? A physicist, and in Jurassic Park, he's a chaos theoretician,
So
which is what
he's always
mathematics.
playing the eccentric scientist, yeah.
And if not, it's like a musician, like a jazz musician or something. Like it's those two things, and he oftentimes those two come together, right? Because when he takes Geena Davis's character back to his lab, he's playing like quite operatic piano,
Yeah, he just goes,
which is
yeah,
such
he just plays the incel card so well.
a he. I think it's well. I think the thing as well, if you contrast the two films of Videodrome and The Fly, is like flesh is such a visceral word, because in this is like, you fear the flesh or something, like you gotta dive into the plasma pool or something like that. Is
I
that
wrote
is
that. Yeah, I got that quote. Yeah.
I love
You're
that.
afraid to dive into the plasma pool, aren't you? You're afraid to be destroyed and recreated, aren't you? I'll bet you think that you woke me up about the flesh, don't you? Woke me up about the flesh, but you only know society's straight line about the flesh. That's pretty funny. As
I thought that
in,
was quite
you
amazing. I
only
like
know
that.
like the traditional way of thinking about flesh in relation to the mind. You can't penetrate beyond society's sick, grey fear of the flesh. Drink deep or taste not the plasma spring. You see what I'm
I do.
saying?
I love it. Yeah, it's a
I'm
quite
not just,
amazing
yeah.
monologue.
I'm not just talking about sex or penetration. I'm talking about penetration beyond the veil of the flesh, a deep penetrating dive into the plasma pool.
Amazing, amazing. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah,
I
it was
think.
quite a Shakespearean monologue, I thought, at the time, because they speak pretty colloquially for most scenes, and then all of a sudden he just goes into like this really philosophical rant that stood
Yeah,
out.
exactly. You have It was amazing. Yeah, that was the directly after he conducted the experiment on himself, right? And he was still feeling pretty okay. I'm pretty sure
Was it the
he
second
just
time
conducted the
he sent himself?
I think he only sent himself
Oh
once initially, and
no,
that's
he
when
did
he
a
got
second time to show off to the girl from the
the woman.
bar. Yeah.
And that was at the point where I guess he was sort of experiencing the highs of like a genetic molecular transformation. I don't know. He seemed to be like loving his life. It was like, yeah, I can think really clearly, and I'm a better person, and all this. It's interesting. Is it? I think the interesting question there is like, because he was talking about how with the transportation pods, it's not that it moves matter from one place to another, but that it like deconstructs and reconstructs matter.
Yeah.
And so I guess this might be a retail, I don't know. The transported or reconstructed Brundle is made like better, like he's improved upon, he's advanced by the reconstruction or like the mind of the computer.
I guess, well, I think he thought that before he knew that the fly had been spliced with him. He just kind of assumed that because he felt good, and he kind of concluded, oh, it must just be because like I've cleansed myself, like the computer has reassembled me without any baggage or sort of aging, things like that. Then he realizes that, oh, actually, like all the side effects were from the fly splicing, and you know, the fly is essentially like a cancer to his body. It's sort of symbolic of like a rapid aging process. Because there's signs of aging with like his nails falling out and his ear falls off and his skin sort of starts to deteriorate and his hair's falling out.
I mean, like, and that's another great quote right there, which is like, I have the natural history of Seth Brundle, like, Natural History Museum of Seth Brundle.
Oh,
It's just
yeah,
like
when he's got his,
teeth and an
yeah.
ear. I mean, there's sort of a weird implication as well, I guess, because like there are scientists that do test things on themselves, right? Like Barry J. Marshall. He tested, what was it, stomach ulcers. Like he tested a thing for that on himself, and lo and behold, came up with a cure. But it's a pretty dangerous method, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Could have gone totally wrong way. I don't know, maybe stomach, but like it's with any like teleportation technology in film, and I assume maybe in the like real physics of it and biology and whatever, like molecular genetic science, is like how does something be reconstructed? How does something reconstruct exactly? Is that possible? And then if it is a reconstruction, is there no problems with that reconstruction as well? Like, say, the technology, whatever it is, can reconstruct the perfect like synapse pathways in your brain. But is there a difference anyways? Like, can it change you?
Yeah, I guess we're not versed enough on molecular biology and things like that to make comment on the state of science in terms of, because I don't know what we can synthesize or reconstruct at the moment. Maybe, you know, I don't think we can, you know, we can't construct atoms or cells. We can certainly destroy things pretty easily, but I think the closest maybe we can teleport a laser beam. I don't think we have much technology in that manner. Like we are able to, I don't think we can synthesize atoms or molecules or cells or anything.
Well, there is
So
that
in
there
terms
is
of
that CRISPR
theory,
technology, right?
right,
Where you
but
can
that's
like
different,
change the
isn't it?
genetics,
Because that's
right?
where, oh yeah, I guess that we can
Isn't
modify
that genetic
DNA. I
editing?
don't, yeah, I have no idea how the actual logistics of how that process is
Nor do
performed.
I,
So,
but I know that the technology does exist and it
for
seems
example,
to
like
work.
lab-grown meat, it's a completely different thing because you basically just set the initial conditions and then give it time to grow in the right way. So I'm told. Whereas, in terms of like, if we think about the whole, if we try to theorize about breaking down something into elements and reassembling it, so the first teleporter basically creates a map. Oh, I guess it's theoretically possible.
Yeah, but like,
It's basically trying to
maybe the
say that all
question.
your memory is stored in. But like biologically, which I think it is. I think if the first teleporter that creates the map of the thing that it's trying to teleport accurately enough, I don't see any theoretical problem in taking it apart and reassembling it.
I guess certainly, like scientifically, as if like you're looking at like a map of like a genetic map or a molecular map or whatever it is, like a bunch of dots on a paper that says if you reconstruct these things perfectly, it'll be the exact same thing. But like, what about if sorry.
No good.
More like a phenomenological issue, right? Like, so there's a thing by Plato, the Phaedrus, I think it's called, and it's like if you take a ship and you take each like a board off of the ship, and then you take another board, and you construct the with those boards another ship. Is it the same ship as the one that you took all the boards from, or is it a different ship?
I think I reject the question.
Why?
It's just like,
Well,
well, like, what is the real question there? Who cares? Like, is it the same ship? You know, saying something is that thing in the first place is like a fairly meaningless statement. So saying, is it the thing still, or is it a new thing, is a fairly meaningless question. That's just my
I don't know,
opinion.
like,
As in,
because
like, the
you could
ship,
have
you
the
know, ship one
entire.
might have an identity of some sort, but you know, and then if you reassemble it into ship one and say, is it the same ship? Well, no, it's the ship that you built from the parts from the first ship. I
Yeah,
guess it
so is
just
it different or
depends
not?
on the syntax of the question. Like, what do you mean is it different?
Well, is it the same ship or is it different? Like, has
Well,
anything changed?
I
What is
mean,
the thing
it
that.
depends how well you reassemble it. I'm sure it might be a little bit different, or the alignment of the pieces, you know.
Well, all right, in that case
But
then,
like,
like,
for
makes
okay,
sense. I'm
no,
more
here's my counter question to that is like, you've got the ship A, right? And 2 seconds later, maybe the hull has like flexed a little bit. Is it ship B now? You know, is it a slightly different ship because it has been slightly modified by the passing of time and various forces in the atmosphere in the same way that reassembling it, you're never going to reassemble it exactly the same way.
Yeah, that's true, but I think if ship A were to be like changed in form by, I don't know, whatever, making the bow bend or shape differently, it's still the same thing. It's just with like some changes to it, whereas the other thing is like a whole new form. But maybe this is a better example then with cloning with sheep. The sheep. Like the naturally birthed sheep versus the clone sheep, is there a difference? Like, despite besides like whatever happened with the Dolly sheep, like early death and all that sort of stuff. Like, are there, is there a difference? I don't know. Like,
I don't think so. I think if
no.
it's for example, my example why I don't think so is that it's not like the clone sheep is a simulated digital sheep. It's still grown and formed in the real sort of analog world. It's not like, you know, a perfectly simulated virtual sheep. That's where I'd have more of a question about, is it the same sheep? Where we
Why
know
is
that
that?
because as far as we know, our level of reality is perfectly continuous and analog, whereas simulations are still done digitally by ones and zeros. So we don't quite
That's true,
live in a
but
binary reality that can be, we're not sure that our reality is simulatable in like a binary format that we're used to creating our own simulations with
yeah,
using ones
but
and
I guess
zeros.
then like you just if you're just saying that like all organic stuff is always the same, like there's no difference between it regardless of its form of conception or style of conception or whatever. I don't know. That seems iffy, right? Because there's tons of replicated things and they're different.
What do you mean by the same or different? Like obviously the sheep might have some differently arranged hairs, but I just mean for all intents and purposes, it's still, you know, it's a
Just a
perfectly
sheep.
edible, usable sheep. Like I'm sure, like I wouldn't rate its wool as second class to the real sheep, and I wouldn't rate the cloned meat as second class to the real, inverted commas, sheep's meat.
I guess you'd have to try them both out to really
Yeah,
find
well, it
out.
happens in the film, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does happen, and it's
And
different,
she doesn't.
right?
I see. I think in that case, I think that would taste the same.
I think he shouldn't have told her that it was transported before she ate it. I think he should have just been like, or he should have said that the transported one was the real one, and the real one wasn't, was the transported one. Just like some different ways to see, like, because I feel like once someone tells you that something's been messed with, you're kind of like,
Oh, for
oh, there is
sure.
a weird.
Yeah, he's meant to be a scientist. He didn't do that right at all.
Yeah, exactly. He's not following the scientific
Yeah,
protocols.
where's your placebo group? Where's your
You gotta have that double blind.
Double blind, that's the one. Yeah.
But take something complex like a human mind. It could
Well, yeah,
totally change,
that's the whole
right?
question of this, I think. And this is, I think, what Cronenberg, his life focuses, I mean, his work focuses on a lot is the human relationship of how we perceive mind as opposed to body. And certain people perceive mind as sort of not requiring the body, or like the body just sort of is a vessel for the mind, but if we took science far enough, the mind supposedly wouldn't need the body anymore if we were able to augment or recreate the body sufficiently to keep the mind alive. I think he's sort of showing the flaws in that argument with this film. So he's showing the power that the body actually has over the mind, because Brundle, he's like, oh, Einstein did it. He's talking about, he doesn't like to devote cognitive thought to what he puts on in the morning, and it sort of demonstrates his rejection of the body. And then when he becomes spliced with the fly, he does all the gymnastics and stuff like that, and he's sort of rediscovering how useful a body is, as opposed to just his mind. And because it's sort of, you see it in a lot of really smart people where they kind of neglect their body. They might be overweight, or they might not really think that the body is important, and there isn't a two-way relationship between the health of both things. But then, Brundle's body starts to like overtake everything and really deteriorate him, and ultimately his death comes about because of the extreme deterioration of the body.
And he gets fused with metal.
Metal, or
Like
just like
he
half of
lives like
himself? Is it just re isn't it just reassembling
nah, it's
with
part of the pod as well, because
like the
there's a
door?
scene where it shows the door, because it shows on the computer. It's like pod plus, like,
If that scene
and that's
wasn't
why he's
so
got like sort of metal
comical, it
bits.
would be severely traumatic in how grotesque it is. But because it is like a little bit comical, I could handle it at the same time. But it's fucked. Like the thing that
I
comes
found
out.
it, pretty repulsive too. Yeah, I'm totally sure. And it was very pitiable as well, because like it was obviously still able to think like this has
Is
gone too far, kill
terrible.
me. Like,
Yeah. He could have made it even
yeah,
more intense
like, so
by
that
showing
beside.
a mirror or something. Like it could have seen its reflection because it had eyes. Like, and then like that would have been very, very intense, because then it would just be like say, it's in pain, but it doesn't know what it looks like because it's looking at Veronica. But if there was a mirror there or something as well, and it just like really coiled back. He took it far enough. I don't really need to give any ideas.
I think Veronica's character was screaming and crying a little too much, but it was quite a terrifying situation, I think it's
Yeah.
also interesting, and I don't know, like it seems like in this film there's sort of a cautionary tale, or like a worry about the prohibition or the lack of prohibition in a lot of like science, especially science that Seth is doing, which is sort of like pretty complex and far out, and he sort of gets funded, but he doesn't ask too many questions or demand too much, so he's kind of on the fringes as well. And like, it's pure drive, right? Like, his character is pure drive. Like, he doesn't really care about anything, like you said before about the clothing.
Yeah.
All he cares about is putting these things together. And I think he also calls himself a systems manager, so he's like, he doesn't really figure himself as part of what he's doing, although the
Oh
whole
yeah,
thing
that's a good
is
point.
being
Yeah.
done by
So
him. You know what I mean?
he kind of stresses, and also that the other people don't
Don't
know
know.
what they're doing. It's like the concept of cube, where
I
you
thought about
have
that when.
someone at the top who doesn't feel responsible, but and then the people below him who are just doing their job, and they're just doing their job, what they're asked to do. Like they have a brief, can you design this component? And yeah, then you have the thing that does, it's like some sort of extremely terrible creation, and the blame is perfectly passed.
And I guess it's because until Seth is fully like experiencing the transformations. You know, he's like sort of jittering his head around. His like body is all messed up. That he realizes that how much he was implicated in his own experiment, or in his own research. Like it, he was talking about, you know, like I've been cut like motion sickness my whole life. Like there's all these things that he's just like, this is gonna help everybody. It's gonna be really good, but you know, this stuff is gonna go on. No one's gonna get a transportation pod. Like it just seems like something that wouldn't be possible. Firstly, because like I'm sure corporations that run like flying like plane companies and stuff, which is like no fucking way. But also like they did start the electric car and stuff, they're just like, nah, kill that shit. And the second thing is that like all he wants is to show other people that he's done this thing, and every time he shows them, they're kind of just like, oh, that's cool, what now? Like, you know what I mean? Like he shows Veronica and it doesn't work, but then it does work, and that's pretty cool or whatever, but it's doing his time. And then he shows that other woman that he meets at the bar, and she's kind of like, yeah, that's great, but let's do something else. And each time he's trying to get them to do it, no one wants to do it. It's terrifying. Like, and like, so really, the experiment isn't so that he can like change the world and change the state of transportation and travel as it is now, but that he just wants to make this thing so he can show people. Like, it's this pure drive to keep producing this thing, keep making it better and better and better. And it's the same with his body. Like, he's kind of just like, yeah, I don't give a shit about my body. You know, don't really spend that much time doing it. And now he's just like, he recognizes the problems with that. Like you were talking about before, like the necessary relationship you have to like the sense world.
I think that no, that's a good point, and sort of outlines what seems like Cronenberg's core philosophy is that it's like we've talked about this before, I'm sure, but it's like the unconscious drive of technological progress is sort of a rejection of the body. It's a rejection of the natural because we're always trying to conquer nature. It's so weird because no one ever wrote down. You know, there's no Bill of Rights or like what are they, Constitution of Science from the beginning, like, okay, this will be the purpose of science for mankind. It's sort of an unconscious thing, like, okay, we do science to make life better, but it's so arbitrary and so subject to interpretation or corruption, you know, based on different people's motives, usually financial, etc. That you know, it sort of becomes not to make people's lives better so much as, well, I guess make the lives better of those who can profit. So then it just
And
becomes,
so
okay,
yeah.
science is basically done for profit. And then it's like, well, what's profitable? Okay, well, still, like, conquering nature is quite profitable because nature, I guess, is sort of at the root of a lot of people's fear, you know, around death and the decay of the body. So we do science to try and disregard the body. We use our minds in for the most part. Obviously, some science is about benefiting the body and not so much the mind. But in one of those deep focus review essays, they pointed out, they were like, well, why are there so many more hospitals than mental asylums? It's like because the body needs a lot more care. I think that's the point it was making.
I don't think that's true. I think that you could probably say that, but I also think that people just have the mental illnesses were like things that you would just either shut the people away forever or just say, shut up, get over it. And only now are people, and now is mental health being taken seriously, like really.
Yeah, no, I think I've misconstrued that point. I think he was trying to say that maybe he's trying to say that, yeah, in the past okay, oh sorry. The difference in numbers between, you know, hospitals for the body and hospitals for the mind is due to our lack of importance placed on the mind and I guess also us sort of keeping those two things distinct too much in the past. So, you know, we're thinking like, oh, the body, just take it to the workshop, you know, take it to the maintenance workshop, like the auto garage and put some new parts in and shit, you know, and they're very distinct things. It's not like they're treated as related, especially from like a traditional medical point of view for a long
Yeah.
time. They're treated as two different organs essentially,
Yeah, I guess
and
that's
it's
why they
sort
call it
of,
doctors physicians.
yeah, exactly, it's
It's
written
physical.
off as like sort of holistic medicine, voodoo shit if you talk too much about the relationship between body and mind. It's so, and then Cronenberg sort of attacks that as his main point. He's saying like, we do all this science out of fear of nature, trying to conquer nature, and in doing so, we sort of forget how much we rely on our bodies, to support the mind, how important the senses are, and how symbiotic the entire relationship is.
That's true. I guess sort of riffing on your first point about like science is just like it's supposed to be a system of rationality, right? Like it's a science of logic or analysis that says, you have your hypothesis, you test it, come out, you see what happened at the end. Was it right? Was it wrong? Can you learn from what was wrong, or can you learn from what was right? Can it be improved upon? So it was just a system of rationality, right? Like
Yeah, it's like, oh,
rather than just,
what's wrong with that? It's perfectly,
yeah,
perfectly
for
moral
sure.
sort
Like,
of
I
basis,
guess
but yeah.
causality didn't really work at that point in time. They were kind of just like, oh, maybe it isn't one thing that led to another. That thing that happened wasn't actually related to the other thing. There's just two things at the same time, two events. But yeah, I mean, like, and so you sort of see around the Enlightenment period philosophy and stuff like that being called a science, the science of this, the science of that. And so it's just a system of like rational inquiry. But I wonder if you think about this as well, is that Seth Brundle, through like this drive towards like technological improvement, was punished. He said, fuck it, I'm gonna change the world, and he got transformed into this horrible
Yeah,
beast,
I
right?
completely
Like,
agree with that. Yeah, he's
yeah.
punished for the rejection of the body, and then he then ends up, and he's like, oh shit, my body after that. His ear falls off, and he's like, my ear. Oh no.
Well, it's fascinating because at the start of his transformation, he's like, "This is pretty cool. This is a thing. Like, this is good. We want like, this is making me better. I'm stronger. I seem to be eating less. I feel very energized all the time." And yeah, only until there's like a, you lose your sort of the thing that like relates to other people, and like you can tell the film totally changes, when people stop seeing him and when he starts to really start become something different, like when he starts throwing up on his food and when his face starts to get very like deformed.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the love triangle is a bit weird as well, because you think Veronica's boss at the start is just a dickhead, and then he's like a stalker, sort of creep, and then he becomes like her saving grace towards the end. It's a
Yeah.
very strange relationship that.
Yeah, I guess it was just, he kind of is just a plot element for the most part. There could have been a bit more complexity to it, perhaps.
Also, it was Veronica, like for all intents and purposes, she was just like there to fall in love with Brundle.
Yeah.
Because she just like sort of recognizes his sort of singular genius
Yeah.
and falls in love with him. It's just like, wow, you're amazing. And he is amazing. Like, the technology he produces is amazing, like, without a doubt. And he says some sort of funny science stuff as well, like computers are stupid, they only know what you tell them. Like, I like that sort of attitude of just being like, oh yeah, we have to come up with creative and complex ways of trying to change like our language of expression into codified language that computers can understand. I thought that was really interesting. I wish that was pushed a little further, because
Yeah.
on the screen you see the coded,
When he has the
what is
dialogue with the
that?
computer and he's trying to like figure out what's happened, that are you referring to that?
And he has on the computer screen itself, it has like the different genes, and they're sort of like mapping it as it changes. I thought that was really interesting. I
Yeah.
wish they did more with that,
Yeah.
but Cronenberg was looking more for the sort of like body grossness.
Is that, yeah, it's the focus, I think. When he's writing, he's like, okay, how can I make this gross? Like, everything else comes second, perhaps. And he's just like, I mean, which they
It
did
totally
fucking well.
worked.
The makeup and everything is insane.
Some of the really, really terrible bits were the loss of, is it status?
Yeah,
What's
status. Yeah,
the,
his hand and his leg. Yeah, status.
His hand and his leg, that was horrible. That was so brutal. And when the jaw came off, Seth, oh man, that those scenes were too, and also the arm wrestling. The arm wrestling
I
was
watched
so bad because I
most
know
of
that
it. Yeah,
shit.
I watched it with Son, and she all those scenes, she was like, "Oh."
Is horrible. Like the arm wrestling thing, I knew what was going to happen when they walked into the bar
She
and then there
said the
was the arm
same thing.
wrestling.
She's like, he's gonna break his arm.
Like, because it does happen. I don't know why people still arm wrestle because it makes sense that like something's going to break with these two things. Like, if it would be different if it was like two totally unmatched people, like one was a really weak arm, one was a really strong arm, because then you probably wouldn't get that much damage. But against two things that are almost exactly the same strength, the something's going to break.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it seems unlikely where someone's like shoulder and bicep muscles are stronger than their own forearm bone. Do you know what I mean? Because that would imply
Well,
that you could
apparently
break
it
your
does
own arm
happen.
by like hot gripping onto something and pushing. You know what I mean? But, I was gonna
Perhaps
just.
it's just a yeah,
It,
sorry,
well, it does
go on.
happen. Has it, is it a possible thing in arm wrestles?
I'm pretty sure I've seen some arm wrestling stuff where people have that has happened to people, so
It's messed up. There's another one of the essays, same site as last week. I think it's the same author, Brian Eggert. He wrote in 2007, and just like a quote that he has in the essay. Oh, sorry, something he wrote in the essay about the whole mind-body thing. He says philosophers like René Descartes would have you believe that in a body which can be crippled by an accident or stricken with disease, the mind may flourish despite physical obstacles. That tissue is mind independent, but not vice versa. That we can and often are betrayed by our bodies. That the mind is less apt to fail. Perhaps this is why there are more hospitals than lunatic asylums. And yet Descartes overlooks our sometimes superficial attachments to the body. How our attitudes and personalities change if we feel hungry, tired, or sick. Our bodies wear us down, directly influencing our state of mind. And even though our psyche struggles for independence in the mind-body dichotomy, achieving it is impossible since biology and consciousness are directly related. We are condemned to physical processes, as grotesque as they may be.
That's true. I mean, like, there's a story, and this is totally apocryphal. Like, this didn't actually happen, but it pops up sometimes in like various science fiction things, which is Descartes' daughter died when she was young. And he found a doll that looked like her, bought it, and just kept it, and called the doll the same name as his daughter and all that. And because he said, they're the same thing to me. Like, I can never know any mind outside of my own.
Is this just like a myth meme, but like something he would do kind of thing?
Like, it was attributed to him. Turns out it wasn't real, but it's a good story.
But people can believe it because it is coherent with his
It
philosophy
coincides with his like substance dualism.
and how far he took it.
Well, I mean, he was a committed philosopher, committed mathematician. So I don't make sense. You gotta sort of live that at the time. That was sort of how you lived your life. But yeah, it's true. Like the relationship between your mind and your brain and your the body, the tissue. They're all totally intertwined, Like, you're not going to be the same. If you get hurt somewhere, you're not going to be the same as if you weren't hurt. If you get punched in, like, the arm, you're going to feel differently to if you never got punched in the arm. Like, there is a relationship between all these things, even silly things like that example.
Yeah, and he just uses like this, he likes to use absurd examples like this to stress that point because science tends to, the just call it like the unconscious doctrine or the unconscious sort of set of operating guidelines for science seem to state don't sort of seem to state focus on the mind, reject the body to an extent.
Yeah,
The
I mean,
direction of
to
the
yeah, to an
progress
extent.
seems to facilitate preservation of the mind.
Well, I think I would probably prefer to call like science more of a drive. Like it's constantly like pushing forward. Like it doesn't necessarily have,
Yeah.
desire. It's sort of like a
Yeah,
non-human
but
entity
we
that
do
like you're brought
personify it,
into.
I guess, in saying that it, yeah, it has a drive, and we say it's like an unconscious drive because it's not, you know, it's not conscious, but it does. We talk about it as if it were because of how that enables us to sort of describe its actions.
I guess the other thing is like, especially in like the 80s, I guess in America, or even before then, would be like a lot of money would have been getting thrown into science. And where the ethics here, or is it just like people can like assume you can say this is an analog for something like MK Ultra or something, you know? Like there is like there are like experiments going on that are funded by like massive institutes, and that what they're doing, the people don't know who fund them, but they're just doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there is an ethical problem because there has to be some oversight. And I mean, Seth sort of admits that to a certain degree because he's like, you know, I keep it on the low. Like, I don't want people to know. I don't want anyone to make a big deal about it. So there must be some relationship to the secrecy. So it is kind of very potential. It's extremely dangerous technology, right? Like, what if someone wanted to send a bomb through and destroy wherever the other end is,
Yeah,
or
that's a good
like
point.
a someone with some weapons, or like a biological
It's
welfare,
like
like I don't
a timed bomb. Like, would the timer be at the
know.
same setting when it gets to the other side?
And does it blow up the other end of the pod as well? Like, are they intimately connected, or is there something that goes on there? And would it even work on the other side if it was like deconstructed and then reconstructed, or would it just become like, would the bomb come back, whether the timer would be off or something? You know what I mean? Like, how does technology compute time in that way? But I wonder. I guess this is also sort of like a Frankenstein story, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, not to overuse the essay, but he sort of he does allude to that, you know, one can read The Flyers' Conflict in terms of a contemporary romance story. Consider this parallel, replace Brundle with an alcoholic or drug addict. I mean, I know it's not Frankenstein, but he's just referring to sort of the typical romance story. You know, he's high on his substance of choice with his faithful Veronica standing by. Watching as the vice changes into a horrible illness. She runs when Brundle begins to insist that she too participate. She resists, and after time, she sees that Brundle's habit has expanded into a debilitating addiction. She even attempts to detach from him through her attempted abortion. All at once, Brundle crashes back into her life, preventing the abortion and forcing her to eventually cut all ties from him to escape, however painful. The film's final scene marks the emotional height in the story, ending suddenly with the lovers tragically separated. Veronica cuts her ties, but only after Brundle accepts that he has become a monster. Any number of melodramas follow the same basic outline. I'm not that familiar with Frankenstein, but is there a similar part where Frankenstein has a sort of act of realization, or is that different?
Frankenstein himself, and like the Frankenstein story by Mary Wollstonecraft is it's about like unchecked science, essentially. It's
Okay.
about so Frankenstein lives in this village. He's a scientist. He says, well, maybe I can produce this thing. What could stop me from trying to make life? Like, what's wrong with that, and why can't I do that? And if I can do that, why shouldn't I? And so he produces Frankenstein's monster. And Frankenstein's monster, it comes to life and sort of questions like, why did you make me if I can't relate to anybody because I'm this half living thing. I'm terrible to look at. I'm made of all these dead body parts. And you know, if you won't sort of help me figure out why you brought me into this life, then I'm gonna make your life hell. I'm gonna ruin your life. Like, I mean, essentially what Dr. Frankenstein just sets off on a journey, and Frankenstein constantly follows him, never really gets to him, just is always in the background, always sort of looking around. It's the same sort of situation, like, oh, I did this thing, I made it because I wanted to make it, but then I made it. Why did I do this? Like, what's the point? Like, what have I done? You know what I mean? Like, I did what I wanted to do, and now that I've done it, why did I do that? Like, it can only turn out badly, you know?
This is like an example of like having to learn the hard way. I
Yeah,
guess.
exactly. Yeah. Also, like, sort of messing with these things, messing with these, like, just because you can't do it would just because you can do it, maybe, it doesn't mean you should. You know
Well,
what I mean?
it
Like,
does speak to the utility of art, and we touch on this sometimes. Frankenstein or The Fly, obviously no one has created, as far as we know, a teleportation machine, but the utility of, films like this, they can potentially, show us like, well, this shit could happen, so, take care to think about how you do it, if you are really going to do it, or why are you actually doing it in the first place. And it's a similar sort of tack when we talk about like, do sci-fi films inform technological directions of growth, or do they warn us? And
Or
we've
vice
kind of concluded they do
versa,
both. But at least for the most part, they do provide, depending on how well articulated whatever the piece of media is, they do provide good warnings, especially stuff with AI losing control. Like if we'd never made any films that feature AI and certain like, or even Star Wars, that just shows that like, if we expand civilization to be spacefaring, we're still gonna have like fucked up politics and corruption and wars and shit. It's just gonna be the same but bigger.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the AI one is sort of funny because it makes for a good movie for sure, but like at the end of the day, I very much doubt that there's going to be any danger from AI. The chatbots that they put on Twitter just invariably turn out to just be racist monsters.
Do
The
they?
robots that they do make, while they look very scary, I don't think have the ability to be like,
But
to
it
have thought
well,
processes in that way.
it's a very contentious topic because the whole theory of AI is like, as soon as it, proper AI was like birthed, we wouldn't have time to do anything to stop it from becoming like this god creature,
Yeah,
if that makes
Skynet.
sense. So yeah, it's like, as soon as it became self-aware and like assembled all of the information on the internet into itself, and then, took over some machinery that was connected to the internet to like physically form itself, we'll be on, because it would be so much smarter, and it would just like, it would just shoot ahead of humanity in terms of its understanding and knowledge, and then maybe it might decide like, just blow the whole thing up. Like, fuck it. Maybe that is what it decides is best.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that in Ghost in the Shell
Yeah.
with the Puppet Master.
Yeah. And that, well,
Yeah,
that, but
yeah.
that, like, that's what people debate this for real in the world. Like, there's a whole committee. I think your favorite buddy Elon Musk was on the committee for a little while. 'Cause like,
Of course he was,
I
'cause they're
think.
all just fucking
I
cucks.
think Trump had like a committee at one point, or maybe it's just always part of the US government, not just Trump, but where they would have like, there's a whole body to do with warning against the danger of AI. So like these, quite smart people who know a lot about computing are realistically worried about it. So I think there is a tiny bit of validity to that fear.
Yeah, I think that there certainly would be, but I just don't know. Like, it doesn't scare me. Like, I don't think there's enough of a problem, but maybe I'm just living in ignorant bliss. Yeah, I think with AI, the other thing is like, it's just going to be this like really monotonous analytic machine. Like, and that's just seems really boring. Like, it's not going to be like this cool, interesting thing that like sort of, it has to deal with its hatred of itself and its sympathy with itself, all these problems, and how do I deal with other people and stuff. It's just going to be this brain that just says like, yeah, like big sums of math and this thing here and that thing. I mean, if we made an AI that was able to like stop corporations from polluting the earth, or like
Well,
it had like better.
I mean, I get there's two different forms of AI. There's that AI where we can semi like we can we still have control over it. Ask it to like, can you please do this for us? Can you help us figure out how to motivate people to not pollute? But then there's the other form where it's just like, it's some compilation of computer code, like comes close enough to human consciousness to sort of have the thought pattern where it's like, I'm a thing, and then it can direct its own learning. And it's like, well, because, you know, we do it naturally, but we're limited by our physical abilities. But it would just be like, okay, I'm going to learn fucking everything about everything, like every single thing on the internet. It will assemble all that information, and then from that it will make a whole bunch of moral decisions. You know, it will just direct itself, and then it just might decide, okay, I'm going to set off all the nukes.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. Like, I have no idea what the mind of the AI, the Skynet, would be thinking, but I just wonder, like, how is the desire of AI constructed, right? Because, like, if it doesn't have an other, or if everything is its other, like, what does it want? You know, like, it has to have a desire to push it.
It right? might just and blow if there's up. No desire, like, yeah, it might just self destruct because it's like,
I don't
want
to
what
be
do
here.
I want? Yeah, and then
Yeah, I mean, like, because I wonder, though, like, if instead of going through, like, input AI into computers that, like, spreads through the Internet of Things or, like, the technology of things or whatever, you go the other way and you have something like Neuralink that just essentially turns the flesh into just, like, a vehicle for AI. Because if you have Neuralink, you're obviously, it's not going to be you transporting your thoughts. It's going to be a piece of technology that forms and, like, marshals your thoughts in ways that says you can do this and you can't do that. Because if you had something like a Neuralink in your head, it would be your world would be fucked, because you would say the weirdest shit and you'd think the weirdest shit, like, because your mind is, like, it's the conscious and the unconscious. If those two things are expressed at the same time, you're gonna have all this weird stuff coming out, stuff that you don't think that you feel and stuff that you don't think that you.
But you're biased in your hatred for Musk, so you have a cynical point of view on Neuralink. I'm ambivalent. Yeah. Like, I don't think it's a great thing, and I do certainly worry about it. But, you know, I feel like their intentions would be to create it in a way that it is purely augmenting and not shaping the thoughts of the biological portion.
I just think that the translation from thought to technology would have some form of, like, organizing or uniforming principle that does, like, direct the thoughts, you know, like Elon Musk hates unions, so he's gonna put something in there that says, no, you know, you're a perfect neoliberal subject, you are singular, you're not part of a group of people, you're not part of the community.
No, but he doesn't need to make, like, this particular product evil in order to profit from it. So that's why I'm saying, like, he's not, like, whilst his motivations might not always be good, there's no motive for him to make it like some insane mind control or mind directive thing. It will be profitable as is, as just, like,
no, but
even
I,
if
I don't
it's just
think
a
it's,
perfectly.
I don't think he's making it that way. I think that that's how technology works. Like,
yeah, so
technology
you think
directs
it, yeah,
you.
Yeah, okay, so it might kind of make itself that way. Like,
yeah.
With, yeah,
like,
no,
through,
I can get
yeah.
around that for sure.
Like, I don't think Elon Musk makes technology because he's evil. I think he makes some evil decisions about how he makes his technology, but I don't think the technology itself is, like, an evil thing. But I do think, and if we look at the fly as a reference point, I do think that technology changes you in unfathomable ways until it has changed you, and then you're fucked.
I mean, not to focus on Musk's character too much, but I think, and, you know, this is just my opinion, I think that maybe we've even said this before, because he gets way too much publicity on this podcast. But I think,
yeah, for someone that I hate talking about, I love talking about it.
Just always, I mean, he just is, like, he has his hand in a lot of pies. And if we're talking about sci-fi or AI, you know, he's going to come up because he has a lot of involvement with that. But I think that he's obviously, you know, a very adamant technologist. You know, he's just crazy about technology in the future, and he sees himself as somewhat of a, like, savior of the world through technology. I think he definitely drinks the Kool-Aid, you know, the liberal Kool-Aid a lot. But I more see his main flaw as him just, like, being a bit of a psychopath. Like, he's just not very in touch with his emotional side or anything like that. He's just purely focused, you know, like, he is a bit of a robot in the kind of more traditional sense.
Well, that's
and
a problem
that's
then,
what
right?
causes sort of the seemingly immoral decision making. I guess it's more amoral decision making.
It's pretty immoral if you're like purchasing
I mean, yeah,
your
but immoral would define intention. I mean, it would just it would describe intention,
if
whereas I would
he's
say.
into it, if he's making the decision to do these things, then he has decided like that.
No, yeah,
He knows what he's doing. It can't
but
be amoral. If he says he claims it's amoral, it's purely because he wants to exempt himself,
I
same
say
way a lot of
it's a lack of awareness of morality. We said the exact same thing last week, like where he's
Oh
still
my
to blame for
God,
being
like
ignorant, but like, but
if
people
you have a
can be
lack of awareness of
psychopaths.
morality, then
But
you are doing bad things. Like
people can be psychopaths, and I would say in some cases it's not their fault that they are that way. Like they've experienced some traumatic childhood things or whatever that switched off their emotional connection, and then they
Yeah,
make
but
poor
then what do you
decisions
do with
around.
it? Like if you do bad things, that doesn't mean like, oh, you experienced trauma in your lifetime, so you wanted to purchase
I
like
just,
money.
yeah, but I mean, they need pity and help more than than condemnation from everyone.
No. Elon Musk knows exactly what he's doing. He took the bunch of a bunch of gems from like his family's gem mine in South Africa,
What is this? What is this
bought himself a new
QAnon
hairline.
conspiracy?
Bought himself a new hairline. He
That's
knows what he's
true.
doing. Go has a child with like a techno pop singer. Like he's not like he's aware of what's happening. He's just like an edgelord. Anyway.
It's so funny. You it's like you know we're on the so-called left, but then your Musk conspiracy approaches like the reptilian right-wing thing so
It's not a reptilian
much.
at all. Like I just think that
I know that no, I know that you don't think he's reptilian, like Illuminati shit, like or any of that.
I just think that like he and a lot of the other tech giants like Jeff Bezos and stuff, they are like they look towards like a capitalistic mechanistic death
Yeah.
drive where they're just like we can just keep churning this shit. It's the same with Scott Morrison talking
Yeah.
about like bringing that bit of coal to Parliament and being like this little bit of coal couldn't hurt anybody.
Jesus.
Let's just fucking mine the whole of
Yeah.
Australia for this. You know what I mean? It's not.
I don't like I wouldn't want to put Morrison in the same camp as Musk and Bezos, 'cause like as bad as they all are, I have way more respect for Musk and Bezos, just for like I think they're way smarter than Morrison. Morrison is just a useful idiot for the status quo. Like he's just a complete fuckwit. Like those guys at least are kind of like semi self-made because they're extremely intelligent.
Yeah, well, I mean, Scott Morrison is not a fuckwit. He just acts like it because he did get to become the Prime Minister. You aren't
He's a
just like, you don't fall
moron.
ass
He's a
backwards into
marketing
it.
man.
Yeah, but you don't fall ass backwards into prime ministerial shit. Like,
I
you
guess
do
you
get there.
fucking move the pawns in the right directions at the right
Like, you do
times.
get there through. Yeah, so yeah, and I mean, with Jeff Bezos, they're not self-made. They got all sorts of help all along the way. They like the mythology that they're self-made people, but like, they come from rich. Like, they get all sorts of help. Regardless, what we're seeing here is that the same with the fly. These sorts of things, these sorts of endeavors need some sort of oversight.
Yeah, why can't here's a I like this is I'm genuinely asking you this because I'm curious and I don't know if you'll know the answer, but why is it that the left and the right don't align on say like condemnation of these like big tech oligarch figures? Like why do why do right wingers not condemn them in the same way?
It's a good question. I think
Because
for
normally they are
some.
sort of against like the big business, big government sort of thing.
Well, I guess, the big prominent right wingers know exactly where their bread is buttered. They're getting that money from the billionaires. Like, they're
I
not
guess it's also
stupid,
different factions. So like certain factions of each actually would fully align on this sort of thing. Like there's the dumber, right, like there's the more Christian sort of right wing,
Yeah,
like the more
I think.
capitalist right wing, and then there's the kind of semi woke right wing who are all about like they know all about the connection between their government and the tech companies.
Well, I guess perhaps with the, like the more working class right wing, you would probably have because there's a little bit more of like a res what's the word like a resistance from like technocratic government. because like it's all experts and you know they know the right answer and you don't even have a choice. And a lot of like working class right wing people are a bit more just like, no, I want to be part of this thing. Whereas I would say that like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and stuff fit really well into like a liberal, which might seem more left leaning.
Oh yeah, well yeah, they've got the like the tech liberal kind of flag, like, and you know the whole, you know, just like the whole adoption of like these sort of more modern tech companies, like they're always like, LGBTQ, we're on that, you know, like YouTube and stuff, like it's just like Silicon Valley caught onto that early and they're like, yeah, we're left, like, so they, you know, they gained like a lot of liberal love.
But they're sort of left in the way that like they speak to leftists that are like upper class, capital class, that like they just want to keep making money. They don't actually give a shit. Like they want like I can't remember where I saw it, but it was a tweet and it was about like the Democrats versus the Republicans in America. And it's just like, oh, can we please have like healthcare for all? And Republicans reply is like not just like straight up, and then like the Democrats reply is like no, but then it's got like a rainbow heart and like BLM hashtag and like a
Yeah, I
fist
love
up in the
it.
air.
No,
So
that's
it's the same thing.
yeah.
It's just like sort of covered in that.
Well,
But
that's, we should have a political triangle more than like a spectrum where it's like the left elite and the right elite, and then it's just everyone else at the bottom who is made to feel like they have opposing views, but it's actually just like you're just not the elite. So it's like, oh, I'm left, but like if you're poor, it's like we, you're just not, you're just poor, like, you know, and you can have different views on things, but you're fucked either way.
There has to be some recognition of class. I guess with the relationship between the two as well is like democratic rule is a bit more like super egoic. Like they're the ones that always want to tell you like, no, we can't do this. It's not the right time. We don't have enough money. We tried, but we failed. Whereas Republicans are like pure enjoyment. Like they just want to own the libs. They don't give a shit. They want to see people die. Like, they don't give a fuck. Like they want to make more money. They'll like come
Yeah.
live and
And you
like
see
laugh
that
and
those characterizations come out in the memes, like the difference in the memes. And you know, the right wing memes are more racist or more edgy, and the left wing, like the left wing memes less, because it's more like, oh, we're politically correct and we love everyone and we don't do anything wrong and morals
But
are
that's sort
shit.
of like the Olympic like moralizing left that you'll find
Yeah.
on like Twitter or something. That they
Exactly.
don't give a shit. Like they just want to tell you that you're wrong because or dumb because you called like a woman a bird or you said black instead of something else that they don't believe.
The
Like
rich, this is why so many people like despise, yeah, that rich faction of the left more than the right, because the left is like they're the same thing, but at least the right will just be open and honest about it.
well, the right's all about enjoyment. Like they want to get off. Like they love it. Like they're just like they say some shit and they're just like ha, like I don't care about this, but I'm gonna have fun with it. Whereas so it's interesting. And yeah, I think you're right. Like they're both the same thing. They're just elites. Like they're just different. Like the one is like be polite. Like say nice things. You can't say that. You can't do that. And that's how they enjoy. They enjoy it by saying, let's say, like stopping you from doing anything, saying anything that might be real, that might actually touch some sort of difference. Whereas the right wing, they go the whole other way. And they're just like, yeah, fuck it, let's go. Like, I'm going to say the most racist thing, or I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Or like do some dumb shit as well, right? Like, it's like lots of Republican voters now are just like, yeah, Blue Lives Matter. But like, a lot of those people I thought were like rebels and like cowboys and shit. Like, and all of a sudden they're like, no, the police are the best. I can't believe you don't respect the police. I
Yeah, I
love the
guess you see
police.
that reversal on both sides, don't you? Because it's like
For
the
sure,
traditional left used to be so, you know, anarchic and anti-establishment, anti, you know, anti-government, and now you see the kind of more like, you know, there's a lot of like even, you know, like younger lower class leftists who will be still in support of like they'll, you know, let's do whatever the government says, and that's the sort of more like authoritarian leftists, I guess.
Yeah, for
Like, oh, the
sure. Like
government
that's
said to do
a
this, let's do it. Like, let's not question it.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes the government is right. Like you can't give it you can't say all the time that it's wrong, but I guess the sort of I this is what I would argue is like the definition of a left politics or a progressive politics is like keep moving forward. There has to be new forms of like humanitarian signification. Like we need so you have the universal person is like a white man. No, we can change that by reintroducing new forms of progression. We want to look into people take Black Lives Matter as a particular thing, but really it's a human issue, right? But people take it the wrong way and say oh no, all lives matter or blue lives matter or something dumb like that. But it's not, it's Black Lives Matter is all lives matter, but right now all of the lives in there is a particular problem occurring with a portion of it, and this is a humanitarian issue, you know what I mean? So really, yeah, so
I think I
but
guess it, I think it's just that it like as you say, it's the name of it that like spins people the wrong way because the name of it is so is like controversial by definition, and so people will think like, oh,
it's
what are you
literal, right?
saying? You know, are you saying that these lives don't matter? It's like, well, no, they're not saying that, but you know, if you just take the name and you knew nothing
Yeah.
else, then it's like, oh, what are you trying to say? You know. So it's like the
I
name is
guess.
inherently polarizing, and that's an issue.
Well, I don't think the name is essentially polarizing. I think that the name says exactly what it should say, which is there is a group of people that are being treated much, much worse than everybody else.
I just mean like being a name, you know, everything's open to interpretation, and there's two like you can interpret it a positive or a negative way. So you, Black Lives Matter, like, you know, in the glass half full way of interpreting that, it's just saying, well, of course, you know, they matter. But then the sort of the person who is more open to like is more ready for they want a confrontation, they're gonna read it and think like, are you saying that my life doesn't matter? And that it's gonna be inflammatory in that way, I guess.
I get, yeah, no, I think that's right because, but I think it that's only successful, or if people feel that way, it's only they only feel that way, maybe partly, maybe wholly, I'm not quite sure, because they view themselves as a single thing, rather than a community, they see themselves as one person amongst a lot of other people, rather than as a group of people, you know what I mean? And so if you see yourself singularly and you see something that's different, it's not you, that doesn't represent me, or that doesn't relate to me, or I can't see myself within it, you're going to say, what, hold on, what are you doing? Why are you attacking me? You know what I mean?
I guess also
And
like
yeah.
lower class, like say like if say you're like lower class white in America and you just had a really shit time of it, you kind of be thinking like, where's my movement? What about me? Kind of thing.
That's true. That in America, I guess working class white people certainly experience those problems, yeah, directly. And but people like Donald Trump and other people like that mobilize their discontent in a way that says, well, no, it's not us. We can't do anything. It's those other people over there. You know, they're taking from you.
It's a
It's
classic
their fault. They're
otherization.
yeah, like they're taking something from you. You know, you pay your taxes. Well, they take the welfare money from your taxes, or some bullshit like that, as if it's not a government-run thing. You know, so
I
then they
also
can direct it.
yeah, I just love like once you have words at your disposal like otherization, it's so useful because it's so common. I didn't realize that flat earth is based around it's like it's actually a Jewish well the core like part of flat earthers belief is that it's Jews at the helm like orchestrating the whole
Oh,
conspiracy.
really?
I only found
Oh,
that
I'm
out
just
the
gonna
other
turn on the
day.
light. One
Oh, good. I
right, go
haven't
for it.
read through the doctrine of like flat earth, but I just found that out. It's like it's just a classic otherization where it's like they can take a theory so far and thread the you know like these conspiracy theorists just thread so many things together in the way they do, and they're like, yeah, it's the Jews again.
Yeah, well, I guess with that sort of stuff, it's sort of like a two-pronged thing as well, right? Because they're kind of getting off, I think, on saying the thing that's not right. But at the same time, they're sort of producing like a viewer who's like an educated person or something, be like, that's crazy, that can't be a thing. Like these idiots, like they also. What they're reacting to is you being condescending. Like, they might be wrong, I don't know,
It's a
but
fair
like the
point,
fact that there's
yeah.
always people out there being like, what a fucking idiot, like you're playing right into what they want, you know what I mean? Like,
But yeah, that's a fair point. But I don't think flat earthers take the stance they do because people have condescended them or told them they're an idiot. I just think they are idiots. And they're
potentially.
like, or they, they just want to, they need to have some cohesive picture of existence and the universe so that they're like, it can't just be a random, universe, like planet evolved from from molten rock, whatever. It has to be a conspiracy orchestrated by some other, like they need an other. They can't exist in that universe where everything is up to chance. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. I
They
mean,
need
we.
someone who has created their problem and is to blame.
Yeah. I mean, we all have others. That's how we live. Like, everything is another to us. Anything really that isn't us.
Yeah, but I
But,
don't. Yeah, but we're not like. I would say, most healthy people don't have a demonic other. I don't like go around demonizing and being like, well, maybe your other is Musk, but like, okay,
I
but we can
guess,
agree that
like,
our other might be like capitalist systems.
but yeah, maybe. I mean, like, my other is everything that I'm not, you know, like every at the opposite of me, things that I don't know about, like things that I think they want from me, like that's another, but like that's a more like I guess psychoanalytic jargon.
Yeah.
But othering in general is just like, yeah, the purposeful,
Like othering, I guess I'm referring to like when you, falsely create a sort of and personify a problem in and like
yeah, like
point to the
racism.
cause of it.
Yeah,
Yeah, exactly.
like the Jew in Hitler's Germany, you know, or the Mexican in Donald Trump's America. Like,
Yeah, and the
there's
Jew
always there's
in the
a.
flat earthers conspiracy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like obviously like there you sort of have some sort of like racism is what the deal is there. Like you
Yeah.
have like why would that be the case? Why would Jewish people want more shit than they've historically already got. You know, like.
I guess does Cronenberg otherize science, or what does he otherize in The Fly? We can really stretch it back around to the plot.
Well, I don't know. Like, it has nothing. I don't think it has anything to do with science. You know, I don't think it's an other in terms. I think it's just that, like, maybe it's worthwhile for a lot of like, and I think that a lot of scientists might not think this, that you're like totally implicated in your experiment, right? A lot of science is like, no, this is objective, we run it a billion times, but like it wouldn't happen if you didn't want it to happen, so you are totally like you created the situation. You might be able
Yeah.
to, yeah, so I think that, but I think that's totally. There's probably as many scientists saying, yeah, that's true, than there are denying it. So I don't think that's a big, massive problem in science, but it might, I don't know, it might
You
be.
could say that Cronenberg correctly otherizes like human nature, as in, we're responsible for the biggest problems that we create. So, in our own lives. So Seth, his rejection, his flaw is that he rejects his body, and this causes him to think that teleportation leads to ultimate purity of mind and body, which leads him to try it on himself, and shit goes crazily wrong, and then he basically discovers how important his body was. And Cronenberg is sort of saying, don't neglect important parts of yourself, or don't blame them, perhaps. Am I stretching
Yeah,
too
I
far?
guess. No, I think it's interesting. I think maybe another interpretation on the fly here that I've just sort of cooked up is like a Marxist interpretation of technology and machinery becoming so connected to the human, like there's a loss of boundary, and you see it at the very end with the final product of Brundle, which is this like machine monster thing that sort of still knows what it feels, and what it feels is I want to die, It's become too like you've become too alienated. You become this thing that you don't even recognize yourself. You're enmeshed in
Oh yeah. That's a
technological and machine
yeah.
components. You know, your whole body, like at some point, you know, machines became the things that drove people rather than the other way around. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
that's a great
And
point.
I think if you want to push that a little tiny bit further, and sort of look at a new sort of accelerationist or so in the Marxist tradition, sort of a little bit of fully automated production. So like no more people. The problem with that as well, you know, the problem that like
Yeah.
once you fully automate these things, you're sort of totally taken out of the equation. You're not like with your relationship based so much on work. Once you come out of it, it's just like, oh fuck, like what am I? How do I subjectivize myself? But yeah.
No, that's a great take. I think that's a like a perfect summary. Especially with the like the sort of Marxist take on that in kind of, you know, the alienation of the work to from someone's life. So, you know, traditionally the farmer runs every part of the farm and they have a very direct contact with all of their work. You know, if they don't do this thing, then this is going to go wrong. They maintain the machinery, they plow the field, they do everything. And then, you know, Marxism calls for like everyone in the factory to do all the jobs. You know, they do all the administration, they do all the like actual manual work, and they do the accounting and everything. And the film is sort of pointing out, like, you know, the cube scenario where if everyone is just, you know, does their job kind of void of meaning, like in THX 1138, you know, where they're just, they're kind of just like, you work in assembly line, you have no idea what you're building, or they're actually building the machines, aren't they, that like control the whole system. It's ex I love that topic in sci-fi in general, and that's a great point, like that. You know, in The Fly, he's warning of that form of workplace arrangement where you have a system administrator or whatever Brundle refers to himself as, and then you just have like people who play the role of cogs, and then there is no human entity aware of the entire machine or output from the machine. That is the real, like AI or not, that's the real danger point of technological growth. When you basically make a machine or like a system of production too complex, or just, or it doesn't even have to be too complex, but where you are able to exclude any human oversight, that's where like shit can go wrong.
Or you know, mash them together in a way that neither of them are whatever they were beforehand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't extricate yourself from the system in which you've produced. I guess as well, like if we're gonna keep pulling that thread, you'd have to see the capitalist in the film as the science fund. Barton or Brankton or something. Like this thing that just like totally pushes you along and says, yeah, good, keep going, here's more money. Just push, 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 push. And eventually you come out as this horrible monster that's sort of like a bug and a man and a machine. Like,
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Actually, and also, I guess you could, if you wanted to throw in a little bit more spice or like paprika or something in there, you could add Kafka's Metamorphosis, right? Like, you become this. So you know, if we just like put in like a splash of metamorphosis with you know, the man wakes up and he's a bug and no one can understand it, like I think that in like a Marxist reading as well sort of says like, because the work doesn't finish right in metamorphosis, like everyone, his whole family is just like, fuck, I wish you could keep working, like, and he's like, god, you know, my sister's gonna die of this and my parents are gonna lose their house and my boss is knocking down the door. And it doesn't matter that his like whole life has become this thing that's totally like he's become a bug, like, you know, like he's not a person, he's not a man anymore, he's this other thing. And it's the same with that, like he's just being pushed and pushed and pushed.
Yeah, is that what's, I always forget, like what does it mean for something to be Kafkaesque?
Absurd, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Bizarre, I guess. He's got a couple of good books that sort of refer to these sorts of things, but I think you have this this final output of a person that's just totally alien to themselves, and you know, if you even wanted to push it into like a sort of like capitalist realist or postmodern move, would be that like they're just suffused with this sort of dread, this self-dread. They don't want, why are they doing these things? They're sort of pushed and pulled in various directions by other things that aren't them, and they just come out just hating themselves.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. It's like it's such a haunting scene at the end, like what, you know, the fucking metal bug creation, like it's you can only laugh, like, but it's fucked up, man.
Because he, I think the real turning point is when he talks about insect politics. He's like, I'd like to be the first insect politician. Like, insects, they don't have politics, you know. I might end up hurting you, or I might do this, or whatever.
They don't have politics because they just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah, and you can see, like, the worker there becoming this thing. Like, he becomes insectivized, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you can't sort of fight the forces from above anymore, so it has to be directly horizontal.
Yeah.
Like, I can only fight against my common man. You see that every day here, like in the real world.
It's interesting because it's like, you know, all of Cronenberg's films that I've seen, anyway, they always have something to say, and it's usually something, you know, quite clearly philosophical with, you know, like a really just an interesting core message, but it's coherent, it makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, he doesn't like put the philosophy like in your face like a lot of sort of deeper sci-fi films do, like where it'll be literally in the dialogue. Like for, in this, the only sort of, and it's different to They Live, I mean, not that that's, you know, it's John Carpenter, but I mean, They Live, I think, has a little bit more philosophy to the dialogue, whereas this one only had the whole like plasma pool flesh sort of thing. That was sort of the only part where, I mean, obviously they do debate like, oh, should we do this, should we do that, but that was the only part. But then, you know, once you kind of, so I just mean his films stand on their own as kind of like entertaining for if you were just wanting to watch it absentmindedly, like for the like if you just didn't want to analyze it, they kind of still have enough action for like a Hollywood style film. But then
the content is there for sure.
So I think he doesn't repel people by making it too obviously philosophical. There's a lot of action and stuff like that, and there's a love interest and everything.
Yeah, yeah, it has all the sort of the Hollywood points, you know. It has like writing 101 in that, like it has it's a familiar structure, sort of three parts, you know. It's good.
But
it's,
in saying that, do you think, is there any deeper meaning to the whole you can't penetrate beyond society's sick grey fear of the flesh? Is there anything more to that statement?
Yeah, yeah, I think that there probably is. I think people's conception of the human body is, and you could read this directly into the struggle for trans rights.
Or is it like a Freudian like sanitization type of thing? You know, where he's saying we over-sanitize sex and the body, and we don't want to, like, you know, we don't want to talk about like masturbation or like shitting or things like that.
Yeah. I think that's totally true. Like, I think what Freud did was just fuck up the game, really, and just be like, yeah, like we need to talk about these things. But I think, you know, the contemporary world as we see it now is like heavily influenced by like a biological subjectivity that says, you know, this is normal and this is right. And, you know, you could simply look at, you know, feminist texts or like disability theory, like I said before, like the struggle for trans rights, which is that like bodies that aren't fitting this one mold, that unacceptable, totally unacceptable. So, you know, it's only been recently that even architecture has looked at how to help people with disabilities, physical and mental.
So you
You
think the
know,
quote
before
from
that,
the
they were just like, they didn't
films
care.
sort of is it's like it's an attack on the sweeping under the rug of these sorts of things. It's saying, you know, like culturally we ignore too many of the uglier intricacies of the body, and we should pay more attention to that, because otherwise it's only when you kind of like, you know, you lose an arm or you lose a hand that you pay a lot of attention, and that thing sort of starts to, only then does it comprise like a more proportional portion or proportional area of your consciousness, perhaps.
For sure. I think that there's a lot of countries, a lot of social, a lot of societies that just assume that ableism is the only thing. And unless you're, you know, you're struck, maybe you have a traumatic brain injury, or you know, maybe you become disabled in another way, that you even consider that. But for people who are born that way, they have to live that life the whole time, and they experience these like this prejudice. You know what I mean? So like,
Just like your boy Elon Musk, bro. He's been struggling as a psychopath his whole life.
boo, boo.
I kid.
Jeez,
Yeah, like
what a twist,
no
man.
one looking out for these psychopath capitalists, bro. Come on. You heartless, you heartless swine.
Look, I am not gonna spend any time trying to understand Elon Musk. There's no sympathy for me, but yeah, I think that it's quite terrifying for people to have to come to terms with something like a disability or the breakdown of a body, you know, or even like the birth scene without it having a larvae in her is still pretty terrifying. Like a birth
It's
is like a
bloody,
shocking thing to see. Blood, you know, the shit, like
True.
everything. Like
Yeah, and
and just the way that
you don't come across these much of the details of these things in media. And you know, it's the same, it's like old people's homes, you know, like we kind of like the old people's home is the rug that we can sweep all that kind of like nastiness under, and you know, like
Exactly.
cancer wards. And I mean, obviously there are logistical reasons to justify these things as well. Like there are reasons why old people's homes are useful, because you know these people can gather there and sort of form a community, but at the
Yeah,
same
well,
time
if
they
we've
have sort of
seen
been
in
rejected from a community
for
where they are
sure.
kind of like a dead weight, perhaps.
It's entirely true. The Royal Commission into that in Australia showed just how much abuse was going on in aged care facilities. You know, so it's a real thing. As long as well as being ableist, it's ageist. You know, like there's a certain age that things are accepted, and after that, like you've outlived your importance. And again, like that comes back to this sense of like this biologism that just says this is the good time. Like biologists say this is the perfect time, and after that and before that, you're useless. Who cares? And that leads to things like J.K. Rowling saying that, you know, women, you have to be born a woman to be a woman and stuff like that as well, you know, like so through these sort of ideological presences of like biologism or something like that, you start to see these sorts of like different aspects of it being fought against, you know, or suppressed as well, I guess. So yeah, exactly. We haven't penetrated the flesh, you know, we have to dive into the plasma pool.
So yeah, we need to more frequently dive into the plasma pool to understand our makeup, our biological
Or like
construction.
just how sort of disastrous it is. Like having a body isn't clean and nice and fully formed and stuff. It's like it's gross, and it's kind of quite beautiful in its own difference as well. Like there are different forms, and that doesn't make you worse or better.
It's very
Like
sanitized with like nice clothes and you know deodorants and cleanliness and
Yeah, or even just assuming like when you think about like a friend or a loved one or a family member, you don't think about them like sweating and like pissing, and you don't think, you know what I mean? Like people do, and that's why it's sort of like eroticized, because that's like, oh, that's the stuff I don't think about, you know, that's the stuff that's like a little out. And then you come to stuff like amputee fetishism and stuff like that, like you start.
Yeah, or like the whole crash thing from,
Which is a film we could do. It's not sci-fi, but it kind of is as well.
Well,
What do you think about
I
that?
think I think we've made some points. We've made some statements. We
Hopefully we've said something. How's it been? 1.5 hours or something?
yeah.
Maybe shorter, I
No,
don't
about that.
know. Hopefully we've said something.
I rate this wasn't better. Oh, I really was vibing it as soon as I didn't realize that Goldblum was in it, and I was like, oh, sick, like I didn't really know about this. But I'm on, I don't do, is it above or below Videodrome for you? That's the main question.
I'm not sure. I guess if I wanted to go to the cinema, I probably and I wanted to see like a pulpy film or something, I probably want to go see The Fly over Videodrome.
Yeah,
But
I don't love either of them, to be honest, but that's maybe just I'm not that into body horror because it's nasty, like
yeah, I think, if I'm sort of grading those sorts of science fiction, like I would put this with Soylent Green, because they
really?
come back as quite because they always come back in like different shows like The Simpsons and stuff. They always come back and
Yeah.
like the message stays strong. The
Yeah.
films aren't always that great, or they're a little bit too hokey or cliched, but the thing that they're talking about keeps on coming back.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess it is hard to grade it because, like, it's got, it can have an excellent philosophical underlying point and an okay story, but just like maybe some bad acting or some bad effects or whatever. But it's still, and you don't want to write it off for those reasons.
I put They Live in there as well. It's not a brilliant film, but it
Yeah.
has some really great points, and it has the overall thematic, or like the overall position is brilliant.
Yeah,
I
so
love it.
it's kind of like the story can shine through even if the production lets it down a little bit in all three of or all four like Videodrome, The Fly, Soylent Green, and They Live. They're sort of the main four cases so far that we've touched on where it's like let down a little bit maybe by some different production styles and whatnot.
And you could say the same for like Akira and Ghost in the Shell, in that like they also do the same thing, but they sort of get in the trap of anime, which is like to do a little too anime stuff sometimes, but the story is really good, you know what I mean? Like, but it's the form as well. Like, you got to make adjustments for the form, right? Someone who animates something would really want to do some cool anime stuff as well, And someone who makes an action film like John Carpenter wants to do some cool shit. Like, they wants to like watch dudes beat each other up and shoot guns and stuff, like, so it has to, it ha it just has to be in there. So I don't know, at this point now, like, I think that we're starting to see not a ladder, but sort of groups forming around particular themes and questions.
No, that we could sort of reframe the ranking system whilst maintaining our arbitrary, like, yeah, it was okay, or like it was shit, or like, you know.
I think it's great. I think this film is great. I think I would love to watch it again. Like, I just think that the whole thing is gross, and it's interesting, and the characters are kind of ridiculous and over the top, but they're funny, and
It's one of those films where it has a couple of like just purely grotesque scenes that stick in my mind, and then I consider watching it again. I'm like, no, I don't want to watch it again. I know how good it is, and it's similar to Cube. Like we're like, I always bring up Cube, but there's so many scenes in Cube that just haunt me too much. I'm like, oh, I don't want to
I
do
guess we've got to watch Cube.
We do. Maybe
It's gonna.
not. Maybe not next, but we
I
do.
think we should watch. I was thinking about this before. One sec. I think we should continue with Carpenter, and I think we should watch The Naked Lunch, I reckon.
Okay, I know nothing about it, so I'm just going to say yes.
I'm pretty sure it's an adaptation from William Burroughs, the William Burroughs book. I might be wrong, but yeah, William Burroughs. Yeah, if you remember him, it was like Beat Poet Generation, Beat Generation author. So it's pretty nuts.
Let's do it. 1991.
All right. So it's a little, we're getting a little bit closer to the turn of the millennium as well.
Yeah, no,
But
we've really gone hard on the 70s and 80s, and I'm happy about that.
I think we'll have to, I think not this week, but next week, I'm going to see Cronenberg's son's new film, Possessor. You
Oh
might have seen
yeah.
the ads for it.
I read a little bit about it last week, yeah.
And I'm going to see it this Sunday week, I guess. I remember watching his other film, Antiviral, and that would be worth a watch. That's quite disgusting. Like, that certainly his son, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
there's like a legacy there.
Yeah. No, that's very cool.
And
Well,
I think considering, sorry, one more thing
no, sorry,
before.
no, it's okay.
I
Take your time.
don't want to harp on,
Now it's
but
hard not to
considering
interrupt
he.
with the latency, but talk away, man. It's all good.
I think with the year that we've had and that we continue to have, and with coronavirus, there's no idea of when it's going to stop or if it's going to stop or whatever. I think something like Antiviral would be a good film to do.
Sweet. Yeah, well, yeah,
Yeah.
I can't comment, but I agree because I don't know about it, but that sounds I'm looking it up now. Yeah. Science fiction horror film.
Yeah, classic. Just like Dad.
Done and proud. Possessor looks has a creepy like cover
it
picture.
does. I'm legitimately scared,
Are
hey?
you watching it at the cinema?
Yeah.
Nice. It's
Yeah,
man,
it's
it's so much more
gonna.
fun to see horror films at the cinema. It's like
Yeah.
it's less it's just I don't know, it's so much more enjoyable, like particularly horror films.
And especially when you go with a bunch of people, because you're just like, oh, this is kind of like an outing as well. Like, we're gonna have fun
Yeah,
together,
we're in
but
this
I don't want
together.
you.
Yeah, it's way less scary.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think we should do Naked Lunch and then Antiviral, then Naked Lunch, whatever. But I think those two are good films.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with it. I'm into
All
it.
right. Excellent. I need to go eat dinner because I'm fucking starving.
All right.
But
Sounds good.
good luck. Take care. I'll talk to you. Should we make it Sundays then, or what's is this?
Yeah,
Is this Sundays?
Sundays is best because I have
Is 5 good for
Friday.
you as
Hey,
well?
what's that?
Is 5 good for you as well? Is that the
Yeah,
perfect time, or would it be
anytime
6 would be
real
better? Or
anytime. It's more up to you, really.
okay, all right. That's good. I like that. I like being in a position of power.
Yeah, I mean,
I
anytime
know.
after about 3 or 4 p.m. is fine.
Okay, cool. All right. I'm gonna get out of here. Take care, man. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
What are we doing? Naked Lunch, Antiviral. All
Naked lunch.
right, Naked Lunch. Great. I'm excited.
It was
I
a
look forward
box
to it.
office bomb. I'm excited.
Yeah, that's what we want. The people couldn't understand it. All right, peace out, G.
See you there.